The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Hello, my name is Zachary Bennett.
And this is Tim Fakeless.
And we are your co-hosts for the Wolves Wired Podcast. Be sure to tune in to the Wolves Wired Podcast on Monday mornings. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Now back to your regular programming.
All right, back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network at Cold Omaha MN. You can find us on iTunes. You can find a number of the shows on the network on iTunes. You got the Andy, Luke, and Arif football machine. It's kind of their Christmas today, I have to believe, Tom.
Yeah.
Bringing in Tom Schreier, co-founder of Cold Omaha, and the producers today. I believe Bob Sansevier calls him his Schreiducer.
Yeah.
Do not know if he's got that trademark, so I'm going to use it in the meantime. No Andy Carlson today. I miss him dearly. But those football guys have a lot of things going on with the NFL draft coming up tonight. I had heard a couple media types saying that they're going to plan to be at Winter Park until about 1 a.m. tonight.
Yeah,
I feel bad for whoever we're sending or if we're sending anybody. But anyway.
Yeah, Andy or Luke and Arif. And I think they're doing a special episode, too, on the draft. Yeah.
And again, the issue there is that in the first round, you know, it's only the first round tonight. It's a three-day extravaganza in Chicago. Might be moving away from Chicago here moving forward. But you never know what Slick Rick is up to. He might trade back into the first for another pick or even a third one. You just don't know.
Yeah, I guess the word on the street, and I know this isn't a football podcast, but they probably will make moves just because they don't have enough space to house all these draft
picks. What are they, 10 picks or eight picks, something like that?
And their roster, I guess they've retained 45% of their draft picks over the last since Spielman's been here, which is, I think, is 2009.
Yeah, that's a pretty good retention rate.
Yeah, so they basically need to trade. And obviously our guy on the phone here, Chris Shad, probably has something to say about that. But
yeah, let's bring him in. Chris, I understand you were at the game last night and you got some Vikings fan ties as well. Chris, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys today?
Chilly.
Yeah. It's been and tired. I mean, it's just been long games.
Well, and
lately.
So I feel bad for Tom. I don't necessarily feel bad for Chris because he was a fan at the game and he was enjoying some of the adult beverages that we all seem to enjoy so much. But I also don't feel that bad for me because I didn't have to cover the game. I've been extremely fortunate. So far this year, Tom and I have split the Twins beat 50-50, and every single game that has had a delay or any sort of timing issue has come on Tom's watch. I don't know, closed circuit to Twins press, the media directors and all that, let them know that if Tom's in the house to prepare for a long one. But it's been that kind of a go for you so far, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, even that the Milwaukee game, I think they won like 7-4 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remembered there was so much talk about, I think they ended up splitting the series, but if they could kind of sweep and that they've, you know, won a couple games. I think they were like 4-9 at that point after starting 0-9. And even Molitor said it himself. He was like, it didn't feel like a win because you sat there for 2 hours in the rain. And I enjoy baseball. I think we all do. And this is why we're on the podcast. But it's pretty uncanny, especially when we've kind of divided these games up so that, you know, none of us are just zombies walking around.
We're all zombies tonight.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to probably take a little napper here once this podcast is done.
All right, so 7-15, they're welcoming the Tigers into town tomorrow, 10-10. Mike Pelfrey going to be starting one of those games, obviously. Love that hashtag old friend bit. But I want to ask Chris while we've got him here. Chris, what was your take of last night's game? You know, obviously couldn't secure the sweep, but you got into town, got to check out Jose Berrios or Berrios, depending on how you want to say it. His big league debut was a little bit shaky. Good stuff, spotty command. But what was your takeaway from last night's game? And what were you thinking about as you drove first to Plainview and then to Rochester post game?
My first thought was this is a really long drive. you know, it was really late and it was dark and yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about actually making the pit stop in Plainview and just sleeping for a couple hours, but
you got BG's staying alive playing in your head to stay awake and stay alive.
All I could hear in my head was, God, it is dense. So it was kind of that. But, you know, I mean, a couple of the takeaways is, the first one, obviously, is Berrios. And he only get through four innings. He had trouble throwing strikes. I don't know if that's the old hashtag overamped there or whatever.
Maybe.
But, you know, I mean, his stuff was absolutely filthy. I mean, it darts all over the place, and the Indians were able to hit it a little bit better. For a kid's first start, I mean, it didn't go as planned, but I think he showed a lot of promise. I think if you get him a couple more starts at the major league level, because honestly, looking at his stats in the minor leagues, he doesn't have anything to prove down there. So at this point, it's get him some innings up here. If it turns out to be a couple coffee and they send him back down, that's fine too. But I mean, just going in there, making his major league debut, people were excited at Target Field for that debut, even despite the rain delay, all, 10,000 in attendance or whatever it was. I think the kid's got a bright future, but last night just didn't go the way it was. And the other thing was too, it's the defense. The defense didn't do him any favors. I know Rosario had the one misplay in left field where he lost in the lights, or I don't know what happened. He was daydreaming or whatever it was. But, yeah, that was a routine catch, and Rosario just couldn't come up with it. It's just kind of weird how the team has devolved from that defensive mentality.
We break down Berrios' start last night. Again, you said four-plus innings, five earned runs, five strikeouts, two walks. Five strikeouts in four innings, that's the positive. The negative, 93 pitches, 56 strikes, so not enough strikes. And I think that was pretty clear. He was missing badly on a couple instances, and that actually wasn't unique to Berrios, and so maybe part of that was weather, you know, chilly, trying to grip the ball. And I think that some of the subsequent relievers, whether it was Casey Fien or whether it was Kurt Suzuki just struggling back behind the plate, you know, it was one of those deals where, you know, nothing was really going right for that pitching staff last night. The one thing I am encouraged by, though, 93 pitches, was 10 swinging strikes for Berrios. That puts you at maybe at an 11, 12% swinging strike rate. That does back up what Chris just said as far as good stuff and, you know, filthy stuff. The breaking ball was a little bit erratic, but you could see the tight spin. You could see the good velocity. The changeup danced pretty good. The two-seamer had plenty of arm side dart to it. But at the same time, those are the same things we saw from Francisco Liriano when he would struggle, is just locating pretty much the same exact pitches. And so, you know, for him, for a first start, I think there's more positives than negatives. You come out of a game with an ERA over 10, you're going to say, man, that was pretty ugly if you're just box score scouting. But honestly, I saw more positives than negatives. Tom, you had not necessarily a front row seat, but a front row press box seat. What was your takeaway from him? And did you get to talk to him after the game as well?
Yeah. We have a video up online on coldomaha.com. He had a translator next to him, but he answered in English with every question.
That's an amazing trend, too.
He's 21.
Sano did that the night before. Some of these guys, the translator's nice, but they got pretty good English, too.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, we have another video up of Sano giving Arcia crap because Arcia wouldn't answer questions in English, which I think is some of these guys, Rosario, Arcia, and Danny Santana, for sure. You know, the English is kind of a struggle. But, yeah, you know, he was pretty upfront with his performance. I think, as you guys, you know, have said on the show, if you just look at the numbers, you go, well, that guy was called up too early, and he struggled, and he, you know, cost the team a win. I'd say, first of all, you know, he was spotted three runs, which was a good thing for the team to do with a young pitcher. They also didn't follow up on that at all. I feel like it was three straight 1-2-3 innings or something like that afterwards, but they kind of the bats went dead for a little bit. And for a young player like that, I saw stuff, and I still have the same concerns. You know, is he willing to kind of pound the strike zone? And given his frame and size, you know, no matter how much stuff you have to have the durability.
Yeah.
And so those are kind of my two concerns.
Well,
right
he's
now.
Yeah, he's as physically mature as he's going to get at this age and at his body type. And he's not going to suddenly become Randy Johnson overnight physically, or even Francisco Liriano physically. So he's got to work within those constraints. But even in one start, and I've watched him pitch on the minor league MILB.TV feature that they have on the other side of MLB.TV, and you see the slight build, and you start to see the concerns that the prospect gurus had about how he can bounce back or how well he can get enough plane on his fastball to keep it from getting hit out of the ballpark. No home runs last night, a couple doubles, but you still get, even from one start, you're not going to draw too much from one start. You still get a concept or an idea of what Keith Law, for instance, was talking about when he says, you know, I think the stuff's real good, the action's real clean, he's a very athletic guy, can field the position, but you still have worry about slight build pitchers, righties specifically, and he's not going to calm those quickly. He's going to need to spend a year, maybe two, being the guy they expected him to be for those worries to go away and subside. And again, with pitchers too, there's always this potential that they just get hurt. Even Clayton Kershaw tomorrow could blow out his arm. And it just, so, you know, personally, based on what I've watched for the MILB.TV last night's start, done some number crunching, you know, I see a nice number two starter. I don't necessarily see a superstar. I don't necessarily see an ace. But you don't need those in this day and age either. Look at the Royals. And so, honestly, you know, a friend was texting me on the way in and said, do you see him becoming an ace or Johan Santana? And I just don't see it. I'd like to hear what you guys have to say about that, too.
Go ahead, Chris.
You know, with Berrios, I think you're kind of right. The one thing that Berrios brings to the table that most of the Twin starters don't have at the moment is the swing and miss stuff. He's got 94-mile-an-hour fastball, can touch up 95. I don't think I saw a 96 last night, but I could be wrong there. But, I mean, he's got the delivery. He's just kind of got a flash that the other starters don't seem to have, where it's kind of like a guy like Kyle Gibson. He's more of a lunch pail guy. He's going to give you 200 innings. He'll maybe go 500, maybe a little bit over that, maybe a little bit under, you know, a solid pitcher. What the Twins need is they need those top-of-the-rotation guys. And if Berrios can stay healthy, Berrios. Is it Berrios or Berrios?
Nobody knows, really.
Yeah, so we don't even know if it's Jay or Jose.
it's the man of a thousand names. Actually, you know, we could just go with La Machina, because that sounds like an excellent nickname. The Machine.
I think you started something.
Yeah, well, no, it's in his Twitter handle.
That's right.
Deo La Machina. So, I mean, yeah, La Machina sounds pretty mint for a name if he can get it all together. And I think he will. I mean, when guys come up, especially with the Twins, you know, I think a lot of casual fans think of the Twin starters as robots. They're not gonna beat themselves. They're gonna pitch to contact. They're gonna blah blah blah. Johan Santana was the exception. Liriano was kind of an exception. You know, I think Berrios can rack up the K's. It's like you said, it's just a matter of durability and his willingness to pound that strike zone and throw some of that electric stuff that probably couldn't be hit if it landed in the strike zone anyway, to kind of, you know, develop them. So it's going to take some time, but I think he can go to a top-of-the-rotation starter that the Twins have lacked.
Well, and it's all relative. If it's top of the Twins rotation, that doesn't mean it's top of the Dodgers rotation, doesn't mean it's top of the Cubs rotation. But relatively speaking, there's no reason he can't be the most physically gifted, best Twin starter in relatively short order. I did want to ask, too, when you look at this rotation on the whole, and, you know, it can be sometimes hard to isolate this stuff, especially in a slow start. I feel like every time the Twins have a bad game, whether it's strikeouts, whether it's defense, whether it's not having timely hitting, fans cling to whatever it is that happened that day and then call it the reason the team has struggled all year. And so, you know, last night it's like, well, they've been playing horrible defense all year. Okay, well, why isn't anybody talking about strikeouts tonight? When they struck out 15 times against Tanner Roark in D.C., oh, it's been strikeouts all year. Well, the Twins are barely a top 10 team in terms of strikeouts. I just feel like, you know, fans have clung to kind of whatever narrative they can find in the moment. Again, which is why Twitter and baseball is such an imperfect marriage, because you can't you can't necessarily draw meaningful analysis off one game, let alone one inning, let alone one plate appearance, yet that's where we are with that medium. Anyway, to backtrack to the point that I'm kind of circumventing or circling here is, if you were to segregate out the starting staff and their performance, account a little bit for injury, they're obviously missing Irvin Santana, Kyle Gibson right now, who are supposed to be two of their top, I would say, three starters. What has been your, and I want to hear from both of you guys here, assessment of how this starting rotation has done through, what are we at here, 22 games? Where are you guys at? The Twins as a starting staff have the fewest wins in baseball. I don't care about pitcher wins. It's just a talking point. 2-9. But they do have some pretty decent marks across the board. Have you guys been more impressed or disappointed with this rotation so far?
Go ahead, Chris.
I would lean more towards, I wouldn't say impressed, but I think I would be optimistic maybe about how the pitching staff has performed, because mm-hmm. I mean they have some bad spots. I mean, Tommy Malone hasn't. I mean, he should just change his number to 32 for all the 3-2 counts he's been giving out. But Tommy Malone hasn't been great. But I mean, you look at the games and the Twins, especially during the 0-9 start. You know, I was saying when they were 5-11 going into the Milwaukee season, I said I think it was right after going into the National Series, and I said I don't feel like this is a 5-11 team because they've been in every game. You know, I mean, the starting staff has given the Twins a chance to win, and then it comes around to the offense with the lack of clutch hitting or the strikeouts or something like that. And I think that's kind of what you were getting to too, is like there's so many, like, I don't want to call them minor problems, because the strikeout thing's a major thing. The defense thing's a major thing. But, I mean, there's just so many aspects as to why this team is 7-15 right now that, you know, when one of them pops up, that's like the new thing to talk about. It's like, oh, my God, we're striking out. And then, you know, I mean, it's just the order of the day. So, I mean, all those things in the end are painting one big picture. And right now it's not looking good with a 7-15 record. Can they bounce back? I think so. I think the starting staff has performed admirably enough that they can do that. But, I don't think that the starting staff has been the number one reason to their woes.
Yeah, I think that's right. Tom, let me hit you with some numbers before I throw it to you for your view.
Yeah.
Twins starting rotation out of 15 American League teams. Where do you think they are ERA-wise?
Ooh.
Chris, you can jump in if you want to.
They're probably in the bottom half, because they've had some bad performances, though, too, correct?
I was going to say 11.
10th.
Ooh,
okay, so man. Strikeouts. Obviously, this is a team that 5 years in a row has struck out the fewest batters as a staff in all of baseball. Where do you think the starting rotation is? Strikeouts per nine among American League starting rotations.
14th.
11th.
Wow.
Ooh.
Yep, not last. All right. The last one, I don't know if you guys are Fangraphs war guys, and you know, some people aren't, some people are. Where do you think the Twins rotation ranks in terms of Fangraphs wins above replacement through 22 starts this year in the American League?
10th?
4th.
4th.
Wow.
Components in play here, fielding independent pitching. So they have a 4.44 ERA, 3.92 FIP, fielding independent pitching ERA, 4.04 for xFIP. So basically speaking, 3.02 BABIP is kind of hurting them a little bit. They do not have a very good strand rate. Getting plenty of ground balls. A number of components are basically saying, look, this pitching staff has been better than you think. And so when you look at those numbers, it's like, okay, it's painting a little more optimistic picture, don't you think, Tom?
Yeah, so to explain this a little bit, fielding independent pitching is the stat you're quoting,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
And BABIP is
batting average on balls in play. So basically, it's something that the pitcher can't control, but it can give, over big enough samples, it can tell you essentially what percent of balls in play teams are turning into outs. And so it can be somewhat luck, but also a good defense is going to prop you up in that respect, too. And that's, you know, that touches on Chris's point about the defense being shaky.
Yeah, and so that's kind of getting to a bigger point, too. So Arcia struggled in Milwaukee, right? He had a few mistakes in the outfield. Or am I thinking of Snow? Maybe it was Snow.
It's a pick-em at this point with those guys. You know, I think Arcia's looked better. Looks more athletic. Looks like he's in a little better shape.
Yeah.
But it's been, I don't want to say a comedy of errors, I don't want to be rude, but at the same time, it's been an adjustment period for those guys.
Escobar booted a few early, right? He had a couple errors.
Nunez last night had that really bad error at short.
And then you have Rosario miss, and granted there's wind and cold and all that, but miss playing a routine fly.
I can't believe people were debating me on Twitter about who's better, Eddie Rosario or Alex Gordon defensively. That was a facepalm moment.
There was a great, I was thinking this when you talked about Twitter and baseball not lining up. There was a great exchange, and I don't remember who the two people were, but some lady was like, I'm 41 and I figured out Snapchat, and someone responds like, what are you talking about? They go, it's everything that's you know, like you can't put on Twitter that's like above or below Twitter. Oh. And the guy responds, there's nothing that's below Twitter.
No.
Twitter will give you everything. But
run the gamut with Twitter, that's for sure.
Yeah, but no, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense, especially because you talk about the rotation and what's surprising, Ricky Nolasco, hands down, right? This is a guy who was injured the first 2 years, mm-hmm. who kind of seemed to have an attitude problem. You know, us being inside, we got to talk with him a little bit. He's also a guy who I got a lot of flack for because when he was available, I said, I think they need to go get him just because.
He's on the top of my list, too.
Well, there was nothing in that rotation right. at that point. You know, you had PJ Walters and these kind of these guys who obviously haven't stuck in the major leagues pitching on the team. So, you know, on one hand, you know, Nolasco kind of got the injury bug. On the other hand, he's never going to be that high upside guy. I think he's a third starter, right, or a fourth starter.
Nolasco when he's right.
Yeah.
It's hard to say because he's pitched so long in the National League that you're still trying to find out what his ceiling is as an American League starter as a 33-year-old guy. I'd feel comfortable saying a four, but, yeah. you know, there's three potential in there. It's hard to call a 33-year-old guy having upside. But when he's rolling right, getting the strikeouts, limiting the walks, and spinning the breaking ball good, the fastball is not good. It's 89 yeah. miles per hour, and it gets hit really hard. When he works ahead in counts and can spin that breaking ball, you're looking at a possible number three starter in an American League rotation. That's pretty optimistic, but he's kind of shown it so far.
And Phil Hughes, go ahead, Chris.
Well, the question that I have is, you remember last year, we were in this situation with Mike Pelfrey, where you kind of knew what you had with Pelfrey, mm-hmm. where he was, you know, he was awful the first couple of years. What did we have him, 3 years?
Yeah, 1 year deal and then 2 year deal after that.
Yeah, I mean, the first 2 years he wasn't very good, and the first half of last year he was outstanding. He was getting wins, his ERA was really low, and all that kind of stuff. And I wonder if it's just like a ticking time bomb, because towards the end of the year, Pelfrey last year kind of imploded. I wonder if, you know, Nolasco's kind of on that same thing, or if he's going to keep pitching the way that he's pitching. To add to your point, too, about, you know, having to add Nolasco, yes, it had to be done. Absolutely. I mean, one of the top starters on the market, they paid a little bit much, but I think that was the same offseason that they went and got Phil Hughes, too, for 3 years and $24
million. Yep.
I mean, they couldn't go out there. And I remember a couple of years ago, it's like every time somebody like Mike Pelfrey grinded something out and just barely got past the fifth inning, everybody at Target Field would give him a standing ovation. Like, you know, something had to be done. And I think if you're upset with Nolasco, I think at some point you have to start being upset with Ervin Santana, too, because he hasn't been available. He had the 80-game PED suspension. He had and now he's got the back injury, which who knows how long that's going to be. I think with Nolasco, yes, he's pitching very well, but you wonder when that carriage is going to turn into a pumpkin, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that it's obviously been a good start, but I'm not holding out that it could last forever. I don't know what the future is, if it's to keep him for another year, fill out the contract, or if it's to try, you know, get somebody to trade for him. But at the same time, too, the early results have been encouraging.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. so I look at the starting rotation, especially knowing the stats that you just presented. It's better than in years past, at the very least, mm-hmm. and they're kind of in a funky space where they almost have too many guys, at least in the clubhouse right now. You have Duffy, who I believe they couldn't send down because he was hurt. He also is a guy who's very surprising last year as a fifth-round pick. Came out of Rice, I believe. And, you know, you have kind of these intriguing guys like Berrios and Meyer, as well as Hughes, who's pitching well, as well as Santana and Gibson, who you think come off the DL, hopefully healthy, and give you something in their rotation. And I always love Terry Ryan's responses. He's, you know, he's very accountable. He's a guy who comes down when we're having dinner. We're talking to media people, and we'll field about, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes worth of questions. And asked about the rotation, he kind of goes, it'll figure itself out. Someone will be hurt. Someone will be struggling. You know, obviously they have to work around options and all that with minor league stuff. But as much as there's reason to think it could be better, at the very least they have numbers. And I think, as you guys kind of alluded to earlier here, sometimes pitching is just about numbers. And then you just need a few guys to step up and be kind of your high end, you know, the guys who can go toe-to-toe with the best pitchers in the league.
As soon as you catch yourself thinking you have too much pitching is when you get caught in a situation now where if you look at that Rochester rotation, there's nobody in there right now that's a big league ready arm. Whereas when you started the season, you had Duffy in that rotation, you had Meyer in that rotation, you had Berrios in that rotation. You're thinking, man, they're eight deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any of those guys come up, now it's Pat Dean, Logan Darnell, Andrew Albers, who they just signed to a minor league deal. I remember him throwing about 85 a couple years ago. And then it's just a David Martinez. I mean, these are guys that are not coming up to help the big league team.
Yeah.
And so it's just a thing where that depth can go away fast. It's like quicksand. You know what I mean? So before we dive into the record, I do have to read a couple things here. First of all, you can support Cold Omaha and the network by going to coldomaha.com/Amazon. You can type that into your browser. It takes you right to the storefront. Nothing is different for you. So whether you use Amazon Pantry, Amazon Prime, any of those fun features, nothing changes about your experience on Amazon, but we do get a little bit of a kickback, which we do appreciate. If it's another thing you can do that we'd actually prefer, go to the website, coldomaha.com, click on one of the banner ads for Amazon, and then check out some of the content while you're there. But again, nothing will change about your Amazon experience. You will have no – it would be like nothing ever happened. Everything goes off without a hitch. I've done it for a couple different things.
Nice.
Mouse pad, a Bose speaker. So hopefully we see those pennies come rolling in pretty quick. But a cool little thing we've done with Amazon. Another thing we're doing for an April promotion is with Ticket King. You got three games coming up with the Tigers here starting tomorrow. If you – enter the promo code SWING, as in Midwest Swing, like this podcast, $10 off orders of at least $50 of Twins tickets only. That's a pretty good discount. That's as much as 20% off. They have the cheapest tickets you're going to find anywhere. Offices in each of the Twin Cities. No fees, unlike StubHub and other big ticket guys. So you can keep it local. They got 100% ticket guarantee. You can buy with confidence. Once more, that is TicketKingOnline.com, promo code SWING. $10 off. Did I say 10% off the first time? I might have.
Yeah.
$10 off an order of over $50 in Twins tickets. One last time, promo code is SWING, as in Midwest Swing. That's the show you're listening to right now if you're joining us halfway through. I'm not sure how you would do that on a podcast, but you hear it on the radio all the time, so we thought we'd throw that out there.
Sweet.
Whatever. So, guys.
And hey, I mean, $10, that's a beer, you know. That would be one extra drink that you could enjoy. So,
yeah.
I mean, heck, why not?
Yeah,
if you're Chris Shad, you just throw in the promo code, you drive up, have a few beers, and then drive down to Plainville, just like everyone else does after.
Plainview, don't say Plainfield now.
Oh, sorry, Plainview.
You're showing. You mentioned off the air that this is the first time you've heard of the city. Now you're showing it.
I know. I apologize. Plainview, you're cool, man.
You're doing the old Mick Foley cheap pop. You would just come out in whatever city you'd go into.
Do I got any fans in Plainview?
Plainview, yeah, you know, right here in Plainview, Minnesota, you know, just kind of throw that thumbs up and, you know, that goofy smile or whatever.
Or Ric Flair, Roddy Piper, I've been down the roads, always love stopping in Plainview, you know, the 1997 WCW Nitro style. Before we get too far down that road, though, the team is 7-15. They're going to stay that way until they play tomorrow, weather permitting, against the Tigers. And I guess for me, it's hard to identify one specific spot that's let the team down or been something that could prop the team up. So I do want to ask you guys, though, what do you see? Why is this team 7-15? It's virtually the same team as last year. You've substituted Byung-ho Park for Torii Hunter. Park hit a mammoth home run last night. He's up to, I think, 5 home runs.
And I think 4 of 5, I saw this on ESPN.
Breaking balls. Well, they've been off of breaking balls besides.
Oh, and they've gone 440 feet or something like that. It's just absurd.
877 OPS for Byung-ho Park. Only one twin starter is higher. That's Joe Mauer, who had a vicious lineout to end that game. He put a good charge into a ball off Cody Allen. And it's starting to look like vintage Joe Mauer. 20 walks, 8 strikeouts. So there are some small things that are positive. There are a lot of things that are negative. What are the things that stand out to you guys? Let's go to Chris first. And Chris, what's standing out to you? This team is way more talented than 7-15. What's going on here?
I agree. Like I said, coming into the Washington series, I said, hey, you know, this doesn't feel like a 5-11 team or whatever they were. I still don't feel like this is an awful team. I still feel like, you know, if you can get back to the 500 mark around, I don't know, game 40, 50, maybe even 60. I mean, just get back to even water and then work from there, which is going to be a battle because there's seven games under it right now. But when I think of this team, I think of Danny Santana last year. And I think of, you know, how good he was 2 years ago when he was hitting 315 or something. He had seven home runs, looked like an absolute stud. And then last year, because, you know, he had such a small sample size there, he came up last year and he just wasn't the same player. Things kind of wrapped around him. He put a lot of pressure on himself, you know, and things kind of, and I think now this is on a grander scale because you have a bunch of young players. You have a Byron Buxton who didn't have too many major league at bats to begin with, and he came up and he struck out in over half of his at bats. Eddie Rosario. Also, you know, I don't know what's gone on with his defense because he was pretty darn good in left field last year. And now, even at the plate, he's not providing that same offensive pop that he had a year ago. Sano has gotten off to a slow start, you know, but he's heating up. Dozier is heating up. Some of the veterans are. And, you know, I just think that a lot of these guys are kind of going through that sophomore slump collectively. And I think that's dragging the Twins down. And also, you look at the schedule that they've had, they've played some pretty good teams. I mean, Baltimore's top of the AL East, or towards the top of the AL East. Washington's one of the best teams in baseball. Chicago is the best team in baseball, I believe, right now, which is the offseason champions of the world. They're doing some work right now.
Either Chicago, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they haven't been playing, you know, the I mean, this is kind of a dated reference, but they haven't been playing the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, so to speak. I mean, they've been playing pretty good teams, and I mean, you know, they're getting beat. They took 2 out of 3 out of Cleveland. Maybe that's something that gets them going, and, you know, a visit from Big Pelf should do wonders as well. So hopefully they can keep winning series and get back to that 500 mark.
Yeah, the thing I worry about with Pelf is he's got kind of that vibe now where, you know, when you're about ready to take the dog to vet to put it down, and it just kind of perks up. All of a sudden, it's like a puppy all over again. Well, Pelf, yeah. Big Pelf is in very, very scary waters with the Detroit Tigers. Daniel Norris, big prospect that they got in the David Price trade, was activated. He's been battling a lot of crazy stuff, cancer kind of number one with a bullet. And he's back throwing for, I think, AAA Toledo. But that's the guy they've kind of got earmarked to take Big Pelf's spot. I've maintained for a number of years now that Pelf would be a better reliever, and we might find out if that's true in pretty quick fashion here. Now, you'd mentioned the offense and the sophomore slumps. I think it's live by the kids, die by the kids. And this is what fans have been clamoring for the last 5 years when they were bad and not interesting. The phrase that you hear is, if you're not going to be good, at least be interesting. That's the Philadelphia Phillies right now. Vince Velasquez striking out 16 in a three-hitter. I think it was against the Padres, so, you know, whatever.
Caveat.
Yeah. But it's the kind of thing that these are the kind of stretches you can have when you got kids playing maybe 5 of 9 or 6 of 9 spots in the lineup. And so do you guys get the sense this is a team that can rattle off 5 or 7 wins in a row to get back to 500? Or are we in a situation where, you know, like Bert Blylev and Dick Bramer say nonstop on TV, you have to win series. You got to win 2 or 3, split your 4-gamers, and get back to 500. What's the view for this team and their path back to 500? I believe they're going to get there, but is it going to have to be a winning streak, or is it just going to be slow and steady, you know, gets back into the race?
I think a winning streak would breed more confidence with this team, and I think that's quietly one of the issues that's going on right now. Because when you start off 0-9, you're going, oh, no. But since the 0-9 started, they've been 7-6. Okay, we'll throw that out the window. But, I mean, it's better than they were, right? I think they have the talent to put together a winning streak. I think that, you know, if you get your veteran pitchers back and they start throwing, I think if you get Berrios a little bit more seasoning, I think all those things could mix in, and I think the Twins could rip off, you know, a 6 or 7 game winning streak and kind of eke back that 500 mark. But I also agree with Dick and Bert that you do need to win your series. You need to
old Dick and Bert.
It's gonna, be a while before Tom recovers from that one, Chris.
Yeah. Old Dick and Bert.
Well, so
you know, as long as they don't get overamped or you know, too strong or any of those things, I think
hashtag
they'll be
too
fine.
Strong, like the sinker pitchers with their sinkers flattening out, a la Nick Blackburn a couple years ago. Yeah. No, I agree.
Nick Blackburn behind the scenes, I bet. I don't know if you guys had access in the time, but I just envision Nick Blackburn like pulling a semi truck with his teeth like before games. Or, like, I don't even know where Nick Blackburn is, but I'm sure he's just bench pressing a Prius like 25 times, just no effort at all.
He's down in Oklahoma. You can't rule anything out with guys from there.
He was always too strong. So, I mean, he's just like the Incredible Hulk. And then all of a sudden he'd go back to the dugout and be like, oh, what happened? We're down 10-0. But anyway, that's a side note.
My thing with this team, I think you're right with young players. There's a lot of. They're always very erratic, and you kind of there's always that hope that they could kind of reel off a winning streak maybe late in the season and sneak in the playoffs or whatever, and at the same time they could struggle with things that either look basic or you would be surprised a professional player would struggle with. I think the other point is they're just a weirdly kind of configured team. You have Sano, who after seeing him at third base, and I know Brandon, you were on Twitter kind of pointing this out, this old myth of Sano can't play third, that's a myth. You know, this guy can make the throws. He does things physically that just very few people in general and major league players specifically can do. And I think the quote unquote, if the Twins are thinking long term outfield, they're thinking wrong. At the same time, if they're being rational here and understanding that, look, Sano could boot a few balls here and then lose confidence, and then you don't want it where he's the only option at third, right, or you're kind of rotating him and Nunez, because I think Nunez is more kind of the utility guy and probably not a and he's a nice spark in the lineup or whatever, but I don't think he's kind of an everyday guy, or at least hasn't proven it fully yet. So where I'm going with this is it makes sense to keep Trevor Plouffe on the roster. Leader, a guy who's played all around the field, someone who's really good with the bat. And I think, you know, at this point, it's a point with the Twins where the leaders need to step up here. Plouffe may need to go in the outfield for a little bit.
Yeah, we'll line up with Plouffe, Sano, Park, Joe Mauer when he's rolling. Who am I missing? I mean,
Escobar has a little pop. Dozier's supposed to have pop.
Arcia, if he's going
Arcia,
good.
Yeah.
Rosario's got a lot of pop for his size. It's a lineup that when you get the sense if hitting really is contagious and everyone catches the disease at the same time, they'll start scoring 7-8 runs a pop, and it won't matter whether or not they catch the ball, whether or not the bullpen's good, whether or not the rotation's good. It's not murderer's row. It's not the 1927 Yankees, but in this day and age, it's a lineup that should score runs, and you know you need these guys to take – certain guys to take better plate appearances, take cues from Joe Mauer. Not everyone's got the physical gifts of Joe Mauer, of course, but you know he's taking the most consistent plate appearances of anybody – on the team, and I think a lot of guys could learn from him. Do you talk about Sano playing third base last night too, and you see the plays he makes, not necessarily fluid over there, but at the same time, you don't look at that and say, geez, there's no way this guy could ever hang at third. Like you see him physically in the clubhouse when he's walking around before or after the game, and he looks like a specimen. Not you know, somebody said to me, he's like Shaq if Kenny Vargas is Oliver Miller. and it's like, you know, you get a lot of body comps, and it's like, that's actually not too far off. Kenny Vargas, I saw in a Rochester game recently, he's looking pretty slim. He's not hitting, but he's looking pretty good. But when Vargas was at his biggest, I think it was a really good comparison. You see Sano walking around that clubhouse, and you're thinking, man, physically a guy that size but that built, there's nothing a guy like that couldn't do, whether it's play defensive end in the NFL or tight end. You know, play, maybe not basketball because he's not quite that tall, but physically the gifts are there for him to do pretty much whatever he wants on the baseball field. And that's why I can't even close the door on right field yet. You know, the arm is good enough. Maybe he's not fast enough. You know, he's kind of got that get up and go where you got to kind of go to the front of the car and crank it up and then start downhill and then you pick up speed. But the physical gifts are there for him to do just about anything on the baseball field. And it's great. It's actually quite flat out, frankly, amazing how good he's been at third base defensively in the last few games, despite taking literally like no ground balls in Fort Myers and none in the first like 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, and he wants to play there. Mulder wasn't hiding that fact or anything. He said basically he's excited. My point is less, first of all, I want to be clear, Trevor Plouffe is a leader, and I think he's done a good job kind of being the voice of the team. I think he was really smart to put out the tweet when the team was 0-9 and saying, hey, stick with us. I think we got something good going here. And I think he's always wanted to be that. I think he always kind of looked up to, I know for sure with Josh Willingham, but kind of some of the other leaders in the locker room, and really has always been on Maurer's side. So I think he's trying to look at these guys. Torrey Hunter probably is another example of guys who are leaders and kind of take that by the reins. But I think, you know, you maybe get put in an uncomfortable spot where, going back to the weirdness of the team, look at how many DHs and first basemen you have, and you can't remove Maurer. Maurer is doing what you ask of him. Don't strike out, walk a lot, get on base. In my mind, on base percentage is literally the only stat that matters for him. If he can get on there 40% of the time, he's offering something very critical to a
team. Even 35, to be honest, with this, with the current state of baseball, the AL average on base percentage is about 30, like 311, I think, or 310. Okay. So first base is a little bit more of a premium position, but 350, 360 is still going to give you enough of on base potential with the guys hitting behind him to be beneficial. It's just a matter of now he's slugging a little bit too, taking better at bats, but he's getting on base.
Yeah.
It's the only way to score runs is to get on base.
So I think you have to have him in the lineup. You have to have Plouffe. You have to have Snow. You have to Park. And you got to, they just have to be creative. If anything, this is kind of a stress test for Mulder and Terry Ryan to get the right guys in here and put them in the right position. And maybe you guys don't like this idea, but I'm not stuck with, this guy has to play this position every day. This guy has to play this position. I actually think it's probably good for players, assuming they're capable, of course, of playing these positions, to move around in the field a little bit.
The Ben Zobrist complex.
And very few people are that, you know, kind of gifted where they can play all
around. You can't call everybody Ben Zobrist that plays multiple positions. Danny Santana is not Ben Zobrist. Danny Santana is more Denny Hocking than he is Ben Zobrist,
but he has a value to the team, and Danny Santana, I think, is proving that you can stick him if you need to kind of switch things around. He can lead off if you want him to. If he needs to play the outfield, he can go in the outfield. Otherwise, there's a spot for a guy like that. My point being is that I understand the injury risk maybe of putting Maurer in right. I understand that Plouffe, they've done that, and there's a reason why he went to third. And I also understand that I think Sano long-term is an infielder, but it's not a terrible thing to see if he can play in the outfield. So in my mind, rotating that around a little bit, as long as you're not muddling players or anything like that, is not a terrible idea, because you want all this power in the lineup, because there's guys, you know, like Santana, ideally, and, you know, down the road, Buxton should be this guy. Guys who, you know, Maurer can get on base, and you obviously want to capitalize by, you know, hitting the ball around the park a little bit.
I think that versatility is beneficial in a lot of ways, especially now with guys getting injured, because even the guys coming up, Max Kepler can play all three outfield positions. He can play first base. Jorge Polanco can play all over the infield, and they even say they see him maybe as a left fielder in the future too, or somewhere in the outfield if the bat will play. And I actually asked Molly about that on the I don't know if it was the Milwaukee series. I think it was the Brewers series, or else it was early in this last series. I just said, you know, does this amount of versatility on the 25 and 40 man roster make your job easier or harder? And he kind of got a wry smile, and he said, honestly, both, because it's good when you're put in a position to have guys, you know, Eduardo Nunez can play anywhere. And when he's swinging good, you find a way to get him in there. You play him at short one day, second, another left, another day. But at the same time, I think he said it's also difficult because if you've got guys swinging it good and you don't have room for them in the lineup, there's a psychological element to, you know, what do you do with a guy that's swinging well but you just can't throw him out there? And so I think he's finding, you know, this, you know, the second year on the job, juggling all that, you know, it's not easy. I don't think he expected it to be easy. But it's got to be nice, though, too, in some ways, to have, you know, a lineup where it's so versatile. Eddie Rosario can play all over the outfield. Eduardo Nunez everywhere. You got some guys that are stuck, you know, guys that can only play in one spot. But on the margins of the roster, they got guys that can play all over, and that's a very, very good problem to have.
Got anything, Chris?
I you guys kind of hit the nail on the head. To be honest, I was kind of zoning out a second thinking about how bad I want a nap. But
I think we're all doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Snow thing, I guess that's kind of the biggest thing when you talk about the position versatility, because a lot of people have blasted Miguel Sano for right field. And I think you know, I can only talk about Trevor Plouffe as a leader, but I think it's a one-year thing because I think that, you know, after this year, I believe Plouffe's eligible for free agency next year. Am I correct?
That's right.
After next season, yep.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if they actually wound up letting him walk because, mm-hmm. like you said, Sano is going to be an infielder. He's either going to play the first, he's going to play third, or whatever. But I think that, you know, once Sano comes in, you have Kepler coming up. So right. if you don't move Sano from right field, where does Max Kepler play? I mean, unless, if you know, say Rosario falls off a cliff or Buxton doesn't pan out, you just wonder where Kepler is going to fall into this equation. And, you know, if he hits the ball well, I mean, will they call him up later in the year? You know, there's just a lot of question marks. Wondering, is this just a one-year thing, or are they going to, you know, have Sano play in the outfield and kind of dig their heels in?
Between you, me, and everybody listening with Max Kepler, as soon as he's ready, I think that the Sano experiment in the outfield ends right there.
I agree.
The buck stops right there. I think they believe Kepler is a very nice player in the future. I think that right field might be his landing spot. I have heard his arm's not great, but then maybe you play him in left and Rosario in right. I know Rosario's got a really nice arm. Or Arcia, maybe Rosario doesn't ever figure out this, you know, strike zone thing and he becomes a fourth outfielder, which would be a nice problem to have. You know, Eddie Rosario's a nice player who's got some flaws. You could say that about a lot of players. You could say that about a lot of teams in the American League right now. And so I think, but again, if as soon as Kepler's ready, I think you find out that this Sano thing was just biding time. I don't know that the Twins can get as much as they'd like for Plouffe, and I don't think they really want to move him. He's a feather in the cap of their player development. 12 years ago, drafted in the first round, turned himself into a nice player. You know, he's a shaky defensive shortstop. He's a shaky defensive third baseman. Now he's a very nice, polished player. He started to hit right-handers a little bit more and was off to a really nice start this year before he got hurt. I think they would do whatever they can to accommodate to keep him around, but at the same time, too, is, you know, he's starting to get on that part of being pretty expensive in arbitration, going to free agency here very soon. You know, I think it's going to be a tough breakup if that's, you know, if there's a divorce between him and Plouffe, and that, you know, he's done a lot of good things for this team, and I think they've done well sticking by him as well. But you know what? If Michael Kadire could walk, I don't see any reason that Trevor Plouffe couldn't. And, you know, he's not, I don't think Plouffe is the same kind of icon that Kadire was in the clubhouse, in the community, or on the team.
No, I think it's a good comp. I also think the best thing for this team, because I think there's a winning team in there somewhere, even though they're 7-15 and
they got to unlock it. That's the key. That's a key.
And I think and this is why it's hard. I think obviously the baseball community has done a very good job measuring the game and providing statistics that, you know, can look into the future or are generally correct. The thing that's hard to predict is how minor leaguers, without kind of doing what you're doing, Brandon, and watching it on, you know, MILB TV or whatever, or talking to scouts or whatever, is that there's certain young players who I think get an opportunity, like the big league lifestyle, like maybe have some irrational confidence because they're up in the majors and have had some success, and will just kind of run with it. And that's the kind of young players the Twins need. I don't think, as much as they should adhere to the leadership in the locker room and maybe understand their place in some sense, they also need to just kind of outplay whoever's in a spot that they want to be in. And if they do that, the rotation will fix itself. The infield will fix itself. You know, pretty much all these players all these positions will get locked in. And maybe Plouffe has a spot on the roster. The hardest thing there is that you could argue he could be the bench bat or whatever. But what do you do with Arcia then, for example, or Nunez, who's pretty versatile and has done well this season? You know what I mean? And it's not a bad problem to have. The thing is, you just need superstars to emerge. You can't have a whole bunch of mediocre players.
Trevor Plouffe's also making $7.25 million this year,
which makes it
probably
tough.
Not going to put him on the bench.
Yeah,
same, you know, same reason. It's that play for Ricky Nolasco, probably getting a lot more leash than Tyler Duffy would, for instance, in terms of guys going head to head for a rotation spot.
Right.
Anything we missed there that you thought, Chris?
Pretty much the nail on the head, I would say.
So, do you guys take any solace? You get a lot of flack when you tweet. I guess that's just true for me all the time.
Right.
But in 1991, the Twins started out 2-9 and all out of sorts. Obviously a very talented roster that year, too, that ended up winning the World Series. I think they won 95, 96 games. I think it was 95 games. But they didn't get back to .500 until early June to stay.
That's a good stat.
I think it was like 25 and 25. Twins are about halfway to that point in terms of games played. Do you lean on that at all for kind of like the long con, in the sense that, hey, get back to 500 by mid-June, even the All-Star break, and you got a chance? Especially in this American League, where every team is bound to be decent but not bound to be great. Can you kind of prop yourself up on that crutch? Or is it still, you know, like Chris said earlier in the show, they've played some really good teams. That's going to be the issue all season long. They're not going to play any duds. There's no Tampa Bay Devil Rays in their schedule. There's no Kansas City Royals circa 10 years ago in their schedule. It's rubber has to meet the road every single night. You know, Baltimore was picked to be horrible, or not horrible, but horrible relatively speaking, 72, 74 wins. They got off to a quick start. Thank you to the Twins for being that springboard. But if you thought you were going to kick Baltimore while they were down, they had a totally different idea in their minds, their collective minds, of course. I think getting back to 500 has to be the goal, and if they can do that in the first 3 months of the season, bully for them, and it means they can be in contention. I just think it's a much more uphill climb than just looking and saying, oh, you got to win 7 more games than you lost, or 8 more games than you lost between now and, let's say, the All-Star break. I think that, you know, kind of look at it like there's not going to be an off day. I'm not talking about off days like today. You know, a day where you're going to ambush somebody, start a quick streak, and win 5 games in a row because somebody's down or a couple teams are down. I just don't see that kind of stretch in the schedule. What do you guys think?
Well, remember, the Twins were about a 500 team last year, and they almost made the playoffs.
Outside of May, they were probably below 500. Didn't they win 20 games in May last year?
I think you tweeted this, actually. They were on
78
pace.
Win pace outside of May?
Yeah. My thing with the tough schedule, to use my patented cross-sport analogy, remember with the Wolves this year, that they played so much better, like on the road against good teams? They, you know, beat Golden State and Portland in, you know, ruckus buildings and all that. I think it's actually good that there aren't slumps in the schedule, or there's not projected to be, just because I think that's going to keep the young players on their toes. They're not going to get bored during a series that against bad teams when they were kind of on a hot streak or something like that. So I think the level of competition's good. I think it's a good stat you brought up, or kind of when the 91 team actually got back to 500. And the bottom line is the highest upside players reside in, you know, AAA, or just got their call up to the majors. Mm-hmm. Those are the players that need to get as close to their potential as quick as possible.
Well, what I maintained all along was that this team could be a better team with a worse record based on sequencing, base runs, all that garbage that people spew. And I don't say garbage in the negative sense, but, you know, the statistical people such as myself say, look, you know, you had timely hitting in situations where it was a little bit above maybe what you did the rest of the season, and so that can't be counted on to continue. So I think you can be a better team with a worse record this year and still move the needle towards the next contending window for this team. Now, guys, I hate to podcast and run, but we're pretty much out of time here. I do want to give you guys each a chance for parting shots. Let's start with Chris, because we got him on the phone line before we let him go. Chris, any parting shots, any thoughts on this Twins team and where they're headed?
You know, it's so tough to tell right now because it is April. I mean, yeah, April games do matter. But at the same time, you know, on Sunday, I had the pen in my hand and I was about to write an article how the Twins were living in a fantasy world and unwilling to admit some of the deficiencies that they have. And then they sent Buxton down. They called up Berrios. They called up Meyer and they did some of that stuff. So, I mean, I'm the type of guy who doesn't look at standings until June 1st. If they're in the mix in June 1st, then I start going kind of competitive mode. If not, then it's Viking season. You know, I think get to 500, get within contention around June 1st, because the White Sox, I think they'll cool off. I think, you know, a lot of the American League teams, I think in the long run, are going to beat each other up. And at some point, you know, I do think the Twins will get on a run. It just remains to be seen whether that's going to be enough to get them back into contention.
My final thought here is Trevor May, Twins reliever, will be in this studio in a couple of hours. I know, mind-blowing.
Breaking news, Sounder.
Breaking news. No, but he's coming on to talk video games with our guys. You've been on the podcast, Brandon, talking about MLB 16.
Great game.
Yeah.
Amazing.
A couple Yeah, we'll have to have you on for Madden or something like that, Chris. But yeah, just kind of a video game chat, pretty long. It usually goes like an hour and a half, 2 hours, sometimes longer than that. But yeah, he came on around this time last year, had a lot of insight, has a great voice. He has kind of like that deep kind of baritone, which
plus he's hilarious, like unassumingly hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. So pretty excited about that. Definitely check that out and the rest of the stuff on the network. Otherwise, yeah, I think I'm with you guys. No reason to give up on the Twins. They just need to get going a little bit.
Yep. Way too gifted of a team to struggle this badly. I'm excited to see if on Sunday we get to see Alex Meyer making a start in place of Tommy Malone. But that's all I've got for you. This is Midwest Swing. You are joined by Brandon Warren, Chris Shad, co-founder Tom Schreier. Join us next week as we take you on Midwest Swing one more time.
Hey there, it's Sam Ekstrom, and I'm here to tell you that I'm not perfect. I have vices. Most of us do. Maybe you're like Peyton Manning and you enjoy Budweiser. Maybe you can't resist Dairy Queen blizzards. Maybe you're into e-cigs. Hey, no judgment. I enjoy betting on sports. And if you also enjoy betting on sports for a little entertainment, you'll love the podcast featuring yours truly, Sam Ekstrom, along with Sam Verhulst, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Available on iTunes and on Stitcher. Don't dread the spread. Turn your nickels into dimes.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter @ColdOmahaMN.
The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.